And that was another part of the run, is that I just thought, you know, running 100 kilometers a day is going to be painful, but I don't think it could be as painful as the emotional torture that I went through when I was depressed. So kind of all of that sort of all came together, that kind of culminated in me running the length of New Zealand and doing it for youth mental health. So yeah, all just kind of came together at the same time.
Kia ora koutou, that was Emma Timmis. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I'm Eugene Bingham.
This is Dirt Church Radio, interesting conversations with interesting runners. Okay, new year, new us, new ad reads. I know we can get a bit waffly at the top, so we're going to keep it tight this year. Shout out to the brands we love and that support Dirt Church Radio. So, Eugene?
Yeah?
Snappy, come on.
What are we doing? Oh, the ads, yes.
Oh, Scott Boys. Running.
Joel Boy.
Yep. Scott Running.
Ultra Spy.
Joel Boy sunglasses. Ultra Spy packs. Further Faster. Cielli. Keeping it real. You can find all of these brands all over our show notes, all over our Instagram, all over our Facebook, and you know, if you ever see photos of us or us in the flesh, we are covered in the gear because we like it and we use it.
Tattooed on our foreheads.
I'm getting that this year.
Yep.
Further Faster in Christchurch, the best little independently owned sports store in the known universe.
And getting out there to races.
Co.nz.
And Wild Things, don't forget, you can get your 15 months for the price of 12. Is that right? Yes, I've got the maths
right. Yep, 15 months.
Using the code DCR2021. Probably needs to change, actually. But that's the code, you know.
And that's the ads.
That's the ads. Done. Thanks, Rigby.
We go something like Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jack is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Oh, Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jack is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Dirtchurch Radio.
176 episodes and I didn't bugger up the intro.
Even though I wrote it down wrong, we made it. We're back.
We made it. Totally going to Ron Burgundy that, but we got there. We're back, and what a cracker of an episode we have for you.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yeah, we sort of, you know, we've had a couple of summer edition episodes. Thank you for listening to those. I hope you enjoyed the dive into the archives. I did. I really enjoyed those three interviews.
I went back and listened to all of them and really did love them, and was really nice to listen sort of from a fan's perspective to Dean Karnazes, Lucy Bartholomew, and Scotty Stevenson. What an incredible, you know, what incredible human beings, and we got a lot of love for them. So that was that was fantastic.
Yeah. But what have you been up to during our break, Matt? How you been?
So as of recording, my first day of annual leave since the middle of the year or middle of last year, and you know, working right through Christmas and New Year's. And so as of you hearing this, I'll be 3 days into my first real period of leave since we started lockdown in the middle of the year, and it feels pretty surreal, if I'm being honest. I was saying to you that I feel like I should still be at work, but I'm, you know, gradually adjusting to a different pace and some time out. And actually, you know, thinking about it, the last sort of 6 to 8 weeks have been a real period of consistency running wise. They haven't felt for ages. Been enjoying a ton of good running, actually. Mm. And, you know, we've got some cool adventures lined up for this year, which we can't wait to share. You know, I can't wait to share, and we can't wait to share. I'm doing really well. And it was great, you know, we got to catch up. You know, you came back from holiday and we caught up on Sunday for a couple of 3 hours, and man, you were killing it.
You were.
We were both. No, look, we could just agree that it was a really good run.
It was a great run. It was a great run. You were a beast though. Yeah. It was fantastic to be back in the forest and dry, far out. It's dry. Yeah.
Really dry. Mm. I was out there today just having a walk with the dog, and man, like everything's cracking. And how are you, man?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah, I got away for the first time since, early 2021 for some whanau time down the Coromandel, plenty of sun and sand, and Mokopuna and stuff, which was great fun, and heaps of great running down there too. I was lucky enough to catch up with longtime DCR-er. What do we call somebody who listens to DCR? DCR-er? Probably not.
A churchy?
Yeah. Murray Taylor, anyway. And, yeah, and thankfully, Murray hauled me around some great runs, including up into the hills with spectacular views, you know, down on either side of the Coromandel. You know, it was a reminder that us flatlanders are pretty limited, and it was great to get up and see some sights and try and hang on to Murray as he tore along. He's going great guns training for OGU, and you know, but it was also superb, as I said, to get back to the forest yesterday with you, and you were flying, and I will admit I had a little nap in the afternoon.
So did I.
One thing I didn't do during the holidays was run the length of Aotearoa.
I didn't do that either.
No.
No.
No. But Emma Timmis did. Holy heck.
Well, she's run the length of Aotearoa. She's run the breadth of South Africa. She's run the breadth of Africa. And she's done something pretty spectacular in the Netherlands as well, which will be revealed in the body of the podcast.
Yeah, no spoilers. No spoilers. Yeah.
No spoilers. No, we'll leave that one to reveal itself in all its glory.
Yeah.
What an amazing conversation. What a conversation to have back.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
She put a smackdown on the previous record, which was 35 hours and
35 days.
35 days and 27 minutes, or it was something like that. And she got home in 20 hours and change.
20 days, 17 hours. So 35 days and 27 minutes was the previous, but so Emma is a, you know, she's an artist. She's living in Kaiapoi in North Canterbury at the moment, but she comes from Derby in the UK. And you know, she's, as Matt said, has had a spectacular life of adventure, and the tale that she's come away from this adventure with is magnificent. And she's a great storyteller as well, isn't she?
Absolutely, like enthralled. If you love a good deep dive into an injury,
yeah. Tune in. Yeah. But
her book, How to Run with Horrific Injuries, is it's going to be a cracker, and I will read every page and send you.
Absolutely.
What a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're looking forward to bringing you that. But look, first of all, we should get into this, shouldn't we? So the old January squeeze of races is on. Now, this is mainly thanks to a few COVID postponements and things. Kepler was on at the weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, first time in a while that we haven't been down there. Yeah. But you were away.
Missed
and
it.
I was...
Yeah.
However, we get to do it all again in December,
yeah.
You know, hopefully. So
yeah.
that'll be fantastic. I mean, Kepler, it is the grand dame of the Aotearoa trail racing scene, you know, and people just line up and everyone goes utterly batshit for it, and there's always incredible racing, and it was no exception this year. Delayed from December, it got away on Saturday in glorious conditions, unlike the last 2 years, which we ran. I mean, we've run a few more than that, but like the last 2 years,
apparently you didn't need the snorkel for the compulsory gear this year.
Really? Well, That was, you know, I had a carbon fiber one, which is quite light, but it would have been good to just discard it altogether. Amazing races. And the men's and women's winning times, Ruth Croft and Dan Jones are among the fastest ever seen. But Dan was 4 minutes off the record.
Yeah.
Held by Marty Dent. So, oof.
And a new record in the Luxmore Grant. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is from Stuff's coverage, you know, for Dan, his fourth successive win, but his second on the full 60K loop after, you know, 2020 and 2019. And he was stoked, and he was 19 minutes ahead of David Hounschmidt. Shout out to David Hounschmidt. Wow. And Andy Good, again, amazing run from him. You know, he was a little bit disappointed, I think, in what he was saying afterwards, but still he got on, you know, got there there and gave it all. So good on you, Andy. So for Dan, you know, he just loves going to that race and running hard. And he got to run in great conditions. He'd studied the split times for Marty Dent's race record of 4:33.37 set in 2018, but he got himself behind and was sort of chasing it in the end. There was that hilarious video that Caitlin Fielder put up in the last few Ks where she was kind of yelling at him to hunt down the record, and Dan got a bit confused thinking that somebody was hunting him down. Anyway, it was quite funny. Go and have a look at Caitlin's always entertaining social media feed. She's brilliant to have a look at that. But, yeah, look, he ended up a few minutes shy of that, and, you know, amazing run from Dan again. Yeah.
Well, 4:37. I mean, you know, goodness me. And I messaged him. I was like, man, that was incredible. Well done. Was it hot? And he was like, no, it was sweet as such good temperatures. And then, like, catching up with lots of other people that we hang out with and we run with, and yeah, they're all coming in sort of in the 7 to 8 hours. They're like, that was atrocious heat. But if you're done by 10 in the morning, you're good. He's good. Yeah. No, fantastic. Look, speaking of smoking times, Ruth Croft, she's incredible.
Power to the queen.
She normally would have been in negotiating to get back from Europe at the moment, or at the time when the Kepler was run, or chilling out, you know, or stuck in an MIQ. But 5:23.34 was the record by Zella Morell, which has stood since 2003. Oof. And she smoked home in 5:26.30. So 27 minutes ahead of defending champion Nancy Zhang, which is a pretty incredible margin for a runner as quality as Nancy. And Katie Morgan in third.
Just shows from
Stuff's coverage, you know, she's saying, you know, it was pretty tough. And if Ruth Croft's saying it's pretty tough, you know, that's like, just throw yourself in the river, really. It was pretty tough. I really struggled with that last 15K, but I'm lucky with the beautiful weather and couldn't have asked for better. Oh, what an amazing, amazing time. She's backing up too. She'll be down for the Tarawera 50K.
Yeah.
So look at that. And again, studied the splits of a defending champion. Had Ruby Muir's splits from when she got close to the record written on my hand, and just... She said she realised the last 30K she was off by a couple of minutes at each checkpoint. Mm. And that's the thing too, if an athlete of that calibre is saying, I'm going to struggle if I'm a couple of minutes off, you know that they're just absolutely sort of...
Yeah. Well, also she's not in... This is not her racing season.
No.
You know, so she's been doing some heavy lifting, training-wise and so on. You know, astonishing performance. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. What was she? I think she was sixth overall. Deep in the top ten anyway. Yeah. Astonishing athlete. And you know, everyone who was there and could see her run, you know, that's count yourself lucky. Yeah. Yeah. So in the Luxmore Grant, as we mentioned, a record, David Belchin, you know, he got away and he broke Andy Good's Luxmore Grant record by more than 2 minutes. You know, he pushed all the way over that 27K course up and down Luxmore. He was pushed by John O'Jackson, who also went under the previous mark, and that previous mark was 1:50.54. Richard Ford was third, and in the women's, you know, Caitlin Fielder, who, you know, had that astonishing run at at Tarawera last year, you know, smashed the record and stood around at the finish line having a chat like it was no problem at all. She came down to Kepler, and she, you know, back from Europe and had a great season at the Golden Trail Series, came back down to Kepler and comfortably won the women's section just over 3 minutes ahead of, outside of Shireen Crumpton's record. And she beat Sarah Douglas and Fiona Love, you know, two classy runners. So a great performance there from Caitlin. Shout out to John O'Wyatt.
Yeah, he's to be coached by John O'Wyatt.
Absolutely. So
and actually just have tons of genetic and discipline and talent and all of those things that
all those human beings
have.
Yeah.
John O'Wyatt's probably the icing on the cake.
Absolutely. Ruth and Nancy, 1-2 in the Kepler, and Caitlin and Sarah in the Grunt. 1-2, 1-2, all coached by John O'Wyatt. So there we go.
Other big thing that happened this weekend was the Revenant.
Yes.
So the Southland race that, I mean, it has a very low finish rate.
Astonishingly low.
Like 99 point something percent people don't finish the race. One person finished it last year.
Four finishes in the four-year history. Louis Schindler, yeah. Angus Watson, and Sean Collins in
second year.
It was in the second year.
Yeah.
And Ian Evans last year. Apart from that, so this year, no one.
So they were off at 9 o'clock at night
on
the Thursday. 190 plus K, 16,000 meters of vert. That's vertical ascent and 32,000 meters ish of total vertical change in a maximum of 60 hours. I mean,
I need to sit down and even thinking about that.
Brutal.
Yeah. And the fact that it started on the Thursday night immediately increased the challenge, didn't it? Because that meant they were going to have to go through three nights. And sure enough, no one finished.
So someone who features quite heavily in this week's podcast, the human bicep emoji that is Adam Keane, was the last person standing, basically.
Yeah.
He's quite good at this last person standing lark, but if he's freezing cold and sleep deprived and calling it quits, you know that it's a tough, tough day out.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. You know, and there was some of the toughest athletes in this country, you know, Jean Beaumont, Katie Wright, you know, Madeline Collins, who we spoke to not long ago, she went there and gave it a crack.
Matt Bailey.
Yeah, Steve Tripp.
Was trained up a storm.
Yeah. And he was there right to the end, wasn't it?
He was
in that top six, I think it was, who went out on lap three. Well done, Steve. You know, it's an astonishingly difficult race, and it beat everyone again this year. There were a few other races on over the weekend, including the great Ian Preece Memorial Hutt River Trail Race, which looked incredible as always. It's a really cool event. It's put on in January each year, stretches from the Wairarapa over the Rimutaka Rail Trail and then down the Hutt River Trail to Petone. Jamie Stevenson, I saw, got on the podium. There was also the Taranaki Off-Road Half, which looked sensational. And there was even a race in Tāmaki Makaurau, right? Run Oriwa. Yeah.
Run Oriwa.
Yeah.
That's no joke, that race, I've heard. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the Revenant, but then nothing really is except the Revenant. But,
That's right.
At least we were outside running around in groups.
Yeah.
It only gets busier the next weekend.
Yeah.
So we've got great Naseby Water Race, Ultra Easy, the GOAT, Auckland Marathon, and a bunch of others. So,
hoo-wee. All right. Okay. Well, I'm sure that out of that, someone will have a
Greatest run ever, which is the part of the show where we ask you to write to us and tell us your greatest run ever. Doesn't have to be a race. Or a mountain summit, could just be that time you ran the length of New Zealand in 20 days and change. You can send it in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. And at the end of last year, look, the cupboard was bare. We had gone down the couches between the cushions looking for greatest runs ever. We had literally nothing. So thank you for everyone who came through for us, and there was a bunch of you that did. But look, there's room for plenty more, so please send them in to us. But look, in the meantime, here's a nice fresh one from Trina McClune. She says, this run has a bit of a backstory. I'd started running again after a hiatus of quite a few years, as often happens, went out too hard, too soon and got injured. My Achilles. It took a long time to heal, approximately 2 years in total. This is from about 12 months in. And I, thinking I was still young and quick to heal, had booked myself into the run the New York City Marathon, thinking I had lots of time. My body didn't agree. After many months of pain, cycling and hours of deep water running to keep up my run fitness, I was finally starting to run on the ground again, but time was running out and I'd also planned a business trip taking a group away for an Alaskan cruise. I was pretty worried and stressed about whether I could do the marathon, but continued to train as best I could. I was following my plan, getting runs in when I could during the trip and using the treadmill when we were at sea. My greatest run morning. I woke early to get my run in. We were going to see a glacier that day and I wanted to be there for all of it. The dreadmills were all located at the front of the ship with amazing views, so it was pretty easy to get lost in the run as we cruised towards the glacier. The sun was sparkling on the water and I felt amazing for persevering all these months and getting to the... Persevering, sorry. I felt amazing for persevering all these months and getting to a point where I was actually running on hard surfaces again. Yes, there was lots of ice and snow covering the shoreline. I'm a snow freak. And tiny wee icebergs that were starting to float around us when I noticed movement right to the front of the boat. It was a lone orca. I watched as it got closer, and I'm sure my pace increased with the excitement, and I'm also a whale freak. And then I jumped off the treadmill and followed it as it swam alongside and down the side of the ship, exhilarated at what I was experiencing until it finally passed us the back of the ship and kept going. I made my way back to the treadmill and finished my run high on that amazing feeling where you know how lucky you are to be running or else you would have missed an amazing experience. As an aside, I never made it to New York. It's just 2 weeks after this, and 2 weeks prior to traveling on my 50th birthday, I was unexpectedly admitted to the hospital and a few days later had emergency surgery. I was gutted, and she says, and that's an understatement. I did, however, make up for it by continuing training and competing a couple of halves, the Waitomo 35K and finally Tarawera 15K 14 months later. Such is life, right? Cheers, Trina.
Whoa. It's our second aquatic...
That's our second mammal, aquatic mammal themed greatest run ever.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Our first cruise ship themed one and our first Alaskan one.
Yes. So, yeah. You ticked a lot of boxes there, Trina.
You did tick a lot of boxes.
So much. Amazing, amazing, amazing. And what a thing to see. I mean, even the snow and ice and the glacier would have been one thing, but for that orca as well. Wow. Thank you so much. The rest of you, as Matt said, thank you to those who have sent them in and did their Christmas homework. To those of you who didn't, we have your names. Anyway, send in your greatest runs ever. We love getting them. People love hearing them on the show and reading them on the website. So keep sending them in to us. Right, on to our interview, Matt.
Emma Timmis. She's an artist. She's a runner. At times she's a... No, I'm not going to ruin it. You have to find out what she did in the Netherlands. Artist, runner, adventurer, explorer, and just all-round kind of force of nature, really. Tenacious, funny, warm, engaging, and made it through the day without having a nap today. So that's probably more than I would have done had I just could run the length of Aotearoa in 20 days. So please enjoy this conversation with the amazing Emma Timmis.
Dirt Church Radio.
All the way from Kaiapoi, we are joined by Emma Timmis. Emma, kia ora, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, just starting to feel like I'm recovering now.
Well, I mean, gosh, you've had a busy, you've had a lot on, right? So, first off, congratulations on the amazing achievement. I mean, what was your exact time running the length of New Zealand?
So what myself and my team have worked out for, because I wouldn't trust myself just to figure it out by myself, me and my team have got it as being 20 days, 17 hours and 17 minutes.
Which absolutely obliterated the previous record.
Yeah,
absolutely. 35 days and 27 minutes was the previous record. So you came in a solid 2 weeks.
I had a lot of room for things to go wrong.
Well, you certainly did. I mean, look, so for those people who don't know or been hiding under a rock or really just switched off over Christmas, I mean, you literally ran the length of New Zealand, Aotearoa New Zealand, from the top to the bottom.
Yeah,
20 days and change. I mean, that's incredible. And you've logged it as a Guinness World Record.
Yeah. So the Guinness World Record takes a lot of time to go through all of the evidence that you've gathered. There's a lot of evidence gathering while you're doing whatever it is you choose to do for a Guinness World Record, and then you have to go through the process of submitting all the evidence. So it's only really been the last couple of days that I've started to filter through all of the paperwork, videos, photos, all of that that we've got, and it's going to take me quite a few weeks to get it all together and submit it. And then even when you do submit it, Guinness are so tight with everything, they'll probably write to me and say, you've missed this, you missed that, and then I'll have to go through and find all the things and then resubmit. So it's going to be a while till I've got that certificate, but I've done the run, I've clocked the time.
Was that because, I mean, I know that Guinness, you know, to submit a world record, you've probably got to be... Do you think those dudes who said they ran across America and didn't
Certainly ruined it for everyone else who's
I think Guinness just have their guidelines that whatever you're doing, there's just so many people all over the world trying to beat records that are all manner of different things, balancing tangerines on their head and stuff like that. You know, like there's strict rules and criteria for whatever record you're going for. So
right.
I don't think people doing dodgy things in the running world have made any impact on that. I think it's just people in general.
But that's good to know. Look, this isn't, because we're serious journalists, we've done our research as air quotes. This isn't your first adventure.
No.
Let's rewind it. I want to hear about the time you roller skated across the Netherlands.
Yeah, that was fun.
I mean, is your background in endurance roller skating or competitive roller skating?
No, not at all. So that was the point of it. So in 2014, I ran across the continent of Africa from Namibia to Mozambique. And that was kind of like it was a big event, lots of money, kind of, I was going to say elitist, but that's not really the right word. But it's not something that your everyday person can't go, oh, you know what I'm going to do in the holidays? I'm going to run across Africa. And I'm very passionate about people pushing themselves and having an adventure. And I just wanted to go out and have a bit of fun with my friend who has a child. So it had to be in school time. We just wanted to have fun on a budget, close to home, and show that actually anybody can have an adventure. They don't have to have committed their life to it like I have. They don't have to have sponsors behind them. They don't need to be a full-time athlete or anything like that. You know, you can have a bit of fun. So yeah, me and my housemate Emily, we'd not been on roller skates for well over 10, 15, 20 years. We got ourselves some skates. We learned to use them. We learned to do the whole like turning around and stopping, which is the most ridiculously hard thing to do when you're an adult. And yeah, went to the Netherlands. We used couch surfers the whole way. So we didn't pay for any accommodation. We stayed with students. We stayed with families. We stayed with all manner of different people. Crossed the country from one side to the other. Had a load of fun. Ate a load of food. Came home. Brilliant.
And we're talking, because I know that the Netherlands, you know, like they're big on inline skates. They're big on like competitive endurance ice skating and stuff like that. No, so we're talking the side by side, two in the front, two in the back.
Yeah, like roller derby skates.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. That's and you'd not. I mean, I guess Netherlands are pretty flat.
Yeah.
But
there was a reason we chose the Netherlands.
Yeah. Still, I mean, I remember it being flat at Skatelands in Papakura when I was growing up, and I crashed plenty. So, you know, total respect for
yeah.
Ross getting across a country. I mean, that was enough for me to get across the floor. So,
yeah, there was a lot of floor action as well.
Did you have the wrist guard?
We had all the geeky safety gear.
Right, yeah.
You know, we're not teenagers anymore. So, like, if we fall, we don't bounce.
Yeah.
And so breaking it down, how, I mean, I know this is a strange pivot for Dirt Church Radio in 2022 turning into an endurance roller skating podcast, but like what was the total kilometers and the distance each day? What were you doing?
You're testing my memory now. it wasn't a lot. I think I'm trying to think whether we were using miles or kilometers. That's what's testing my brain right now. I can't remember whether it was about 25 kilometers a day or 25 miles every day.
Either one is a lot to roller skate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't your kind of, I'm getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and finishing 9 o'clock at night. It was all within your average day and having a picnic in the middle, you know.
It sounds joyous. Like,
yeah, it was great fun. Apart from the rain, there was a lot of rain, but you know,
right. Which actually on wheels, like, so I'm not sure. Did it rain on your run across either Africa or New Zealand? But
New Zealand, not so much.
But rain with wheels.
Yeah, rain and wheels is not so great, but you know. Rain and running is fine. It's quite nice, actually. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but
I love running in the rain. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So what's your background? And let's take it back. You got to the point where you ran across Africa and then decided as a you know, aperitif to roller skate the Netherlands. What's your background in the sport?
So I've been running since I was 12. I was pulled over at the end of a PE class by my PE teacher, and I thought I was in trouble because she sent everyone else away. She was like, off you go, end of class. Emma, you come back here. And I was like, oh man, what have I done? I'm in trouble. And she saw me doing a warm-up around the hall, and she said, I think you've got a bit of a talent with running. So my school was right in the city centre, and we didn't have any athletics facilities. We didn't have a field. We didn't have a running track, anything like that. So she basically said, I think you should put some time and effort into joining an athletics group outside of school. And yeah, went from there. So competed track and field and cross country for most of my teenage years. Then dabbled in triathlon, but my swimming's just atrocious. So that was short-lived. And yeah, since then, just always run on and off. So running's been my main thing. And then I ran across South Africa in 2011. And that was inspired by Eddie Izzard, who was running something like 51 marathons around the UK. And it just looked miserable. And I thought, you know what, if he can do something like that, then I'm half his age. And I'm actually a runner, unlike him. So decided I would run across South Africa to raise money for the RSPCA who I was working for. And that kind of gave me a taste of, you know what, I love to travel and I love to run, and you can combine these things, and then you can combine travel with all different kinds of physical adventures. So kind of just started a bit of a lifestyle for me.
Wow. So just for people listening at home who are trying to guess, where's your accent from?
From the UK, yeah. English.
From
Derby.
Yeah. Okay.
So not many people have heard of Derby. They don't really know where it is. It's in the Midlands.
I had a flatmate in the UK from Derby, so I'm shout out to Anthony. But the South African mission was the first sort of big multi-day kind of event that you took on. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much 10 years ago as well. So that's 10-year anniversary was my New Zealand run, pretty much. Yeah.
Wow. And was that, I mean, that's a huge leap to do something like that. Was it, you know, what you expected, or, you know, how did it unfold in terms of what the, you know, logistically and everything, how it went?
Yeah. So I am quite a logical, pragmatic kind of person. So, and I love a big challenge. I love a big project of any manner. And I think for me, that was kind of like my first little delving into having a big project and just breaking it down. And for me, it all kind of makes sense. And it really is simple. Like, you know, people say, oh, you know, you've got a big challenge, just break it down into little pieces. And I don't know, maybe some people out there still struggle with that, but I don't. Like, I love to see, I see a hand up there. I love to see a big project and break it down into small pieces. And then like you see it kind of chipping away. And it was exactly the same for running the length of New Zealand. You know, every day I would chip away at the distance and you see it progressing. And that kind of really works with the way that my brain works.
Right.
It was no different in South Africa. So I kind of just broke everything down into categories. So I needed to raise money because I was funding it all myself. I needed to get the equipment that I needed. So I got that. I needed to get the maps. I've always been into the outdoors and mountaineering, so I'm very good at map reading. So get the maps. Didn't have any kind of GPS. Get a support person. That was my brother on his bike. Literally just broke everything down into tiny little segments, chipped away at it, ticked off everything, and then found myself in Cape Town. And I was like, right, let's go.
You make it sound so easy. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it wasn't, but, you know, like, yeah, you just kind of break things down and then you go for it, don't you?
Yeah, I guess we can tend to overcomplicate things, can't we, and just become overwhelmed by things. You know, it's very easy to do that.
Yeah, and I'm not at all saying that I'm immune to overwhelm. Like, I get like sudden bursts of overwhelm where you're like freeze and you're like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? Why have I taken this on? But you just have to settle yourself down, chill out a bit, break it all down. What's the smallest thing I can tick off my list? Oh, go and have a coffee. Tick. You know, always put something really easy on the list. And then
you're sweet. That is a great tip. That's a great tip. Yeah.
I read something last night and it was even a mouse can eat an elephant if he takes small enough bites.
Exactly.
which I think that's a wonderful thing. But I sort of sit with the Eddie Izzard thing. I'd be the guy thinking, right, we need an ice cream van. If we're going to run for, like Eddie Izzard did, he famously took an ice cream truck with him across England because he thought... Yeah. No, he had a Mr. Whippy the whole time because he thought, I'm running 51 marathons in how many days, so I'm going to have an ice cream whenever I damn well want.
And he deserved an ice cream whenever he wanted.
I knew he had a physio. I didn't know he had an ice cream van, but that's...
I think they're in the same van, probably.
Maybe the physio was the ice cream maker.
Right, yeah.
And everyone's got a side hustle these days.
That's right. So then you took on running across Africa, which again, you know, to me, I would just go, oh, where do you even start? I mean, you know, what a mission that was.
Yeah, so that was a very, very, very different project in the fact that, so myself and some friends, we went to Banff Adventure Film Festival. And after the films had finished, we came out and a friend of mine said, wow, isn't it interesting that all of those films are about men? There's none about women. Do you think women don't do anything? And I was like, oh, well, I think they do. She said, in fact, there was even a film about a dog, but there was no films about women.
Wow.
And I said, you know, I ran across South Africa. And she didn't know that. And then turned out she was involved with a charity in Zimbabwe. And she said, well, would you be interested in doing a bigger run again? But this time across the whole continent of Africa and going through Zimbabwe to help the charity. By this point, we'd had quite a few drinks. And I was like, yeah, sure, let's do that. I said, the only thing is I'm not organising anything because for my last one, I did everything. I organised everything while working a full-time job and training and, yeah, just everything. I said, I'll just do the running. And she was like, that's fine. I want to do all the organising. I'll organise everything. She loves that kind of stuff. And we were both a bit tipsy and we kind of just thought that it was a drunken conversation. One thing led to another and then obviously we were in Africa. So, yeah, it was very different to the previous one, that the previous one was my baby and my project, whereas this was somebody else asking me.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So from soup to nuts, how long did it take? Like, you know, you're at the Banff Film Festival, you've had a few bevvies and it's all great. And then you're in Africa. About to run across Africa. How long was that?
I think it was less than a year.
Wow.
More than 6 months. So, yeah, maybe 10 months or so.
How many visas?
We went through 5 different countries.
Right.
Although, well, we went through 5 different countries that I actually ran in. One of them I had a visa problem, so I nipped out into Botswana, literally turned around, went to the toilet, turned around, and came back into Namibia. So probably 6 visas because there was... the very brief journey into Botswana for the bathroom.
Yeah.
Oh, so you were trying to get from another country into Namibia but couldn't, but you could go from Namibia or wherever you were going to Botswana into Namibia.
Strangely, we all flew into Namibia, but some of us were given a 2-month visa and some of us were given a 1-month visa, which I didn't realise until kind of the day before my visa expired. We were like, I've got to leave the country today. And then, Botswana was there. So I was like, okay, we just nip over the border. And then if we come back in, we get automatically given an extra month on our visa. So carried on, as you do.
Problem solving on the run.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what these sorts of adventures are, aren't they? They're massive problem solving operations.
100%.
Because you can plan to the nth degree. You have your spreadsheet with your coffee and so on in it. But things go wrong, don't they? And so is that something you've always been good at, solving problems and figuring things out on the fly like that?
I don't know that I've always been good at it. I think it's definitely something I've improved on as I've got older. And definitely as I've kind of probably got into my 30s and worked on being a little bit more calmer about things. I think, you know, in your 20s, you're quite happy to like rush into things and like something goes wrong and it's all exciting and it's an adventure and you get stressed and people get angry and emotions are everywhere. And I think like as I've got a little bit older, I've kind of approached things from a more calmer perspective. And, you know, a problem comes up and I will literally just go into, okay, problem solving mode. Like there's no point stressing, no point getting angry, no point blaming someone. Even if someone is to blame, even if I'm to blame, it doesn't really matter because it doesn't resolve anything by blaming them. It's just, we've got to fix this problem. So, yeah.
So where did New Zealand come in? When did that come pop into your head, A, as a place to come and live, and B, as a place to run the length of?
Yeah, so coming here to live was definitely the first thing. And that came about when I got to the age where it was a case of, if I take my working holiday visa now, I can come here, and if I don't, you're too old.
Right.
So, yeah, it was literally as I was turning 30. So I could, being British, I could get a working holiday visa for New Zealand and or Canada, but they have to be done before I turn 30. I've still never been to Canada. I'd love to go one day, but I was weighing up the two, and all of my friends that had been to New Zealand were like, you've just got to go to New Zealand. It's just going to be perfect for you as a person and the things that you love. So chose New Zealand, and because I would be too old to extend it, because you normally get granted a 1 year working holiday visa, but you can extend it for another year if you choose to. But I would have been too old. So I just paid the money straight off so that I could get 2 years to come here. And I was genuinely just thinking I would come here for 2 years and then go back to the UK, but just fell in love with it. I lived in Queenstown for 4.5 years, and, you know, it's just the most beautiful, spectacular place ever. So didn't leave. And then when I was there, that was when I decided that I would like to go for the New Zealand record. But literally within a few months of deciding that I wanted to do it, I got a leg injury. And that was 4 years ago. And the leg injury put me out of action for pretty much 3 years.
Mm. Well, talk us through that. Was it a sudden thing? Was it a sort of an exacerbation of a chronic injury? And I read on your website that you said that it was undiagnosed. So to this day, Do we still not know what happened?
No. So it's a weird, complicated one that I could probably talk to you for hours about, but I think your listeners would be quite bored, so I'll keep it brief.
I don't think you know our listeners.
Injury, tell me more. Yeah,
everyone has just leaned in a little bit now.
I'll put all of the scans and tests and everything on my So I can't honestly remember whether there was a bit of a build-up to the pain happening or whether it did just come on one day. But I know that I was back in the UK and I went for a run one day, and literally it was like, snap, my leg hurts. It was hurts. I was in the middle of a 33-kilometer run, which was a very normal thing for me. That's not me pushing anything. And I think I got to kilometer 27 and I just couldn't run anymore. Yeah, I was just down to walking because my leg was sore. And it was definitely in the soft tissue. It wasn't the bone. It was very, very obvious kind of where it was and what it was. So I did the usual thing of just, you know, I'll take a week off, see if it disappears. Tried to run again. I'm still there. Take a couple of weeks off. Still there. Got some physio treatment. They weren't exactly sure what it was. Continued with physio for kind of 8 months of just, they weren't really sure, but let's keep trying to work on these different things. Do more core, do more glutes. That's, you know, we're all familiar with that one. Do more core and glutes, you'll be fine. So had that, had a scan, had an ultrasound scan that they noticed that there was something weird, abnormal with my vascular system in my leg, but they said that that couldn't possibly be the problem. Had had an x-ray to check my bone, that was fine. Had an MRI to check my bone. Then they said that there was some kind of stress reaction on the bone, so I should take a month off, so no weight bearing, which meant I was a rock climbing instructor, so that meant no work. So I just sat on my bum for a month, and then the pain was still there, so they said have another month. So 2 months of just sitting around doing nothing, except for swimming, went swimming. This kind of went on, so that was all in New Zealand, and was kind of getting to the end of where I could push the medical facilities over here. So then went back to the UK to seek out some more kind of sport-specific doctors. Saw a load of people over there. They thought maybe it was coming from my spine. So they were looking to do some testing with my spine and putting some steroid injections into my spine, but that just didn't sit very well with me. I think you know your body, and I knew that it wasn't from my spine. had lots of testing, bone density scans, nerve conduction scans, had all these different things. Nobody could find anything. You know, we're kind of talking like up to a year and a half after the onset of the problem now. And my mental health massively deteriorated. Like, you know, we're all told that we should do exercise so that we feel good, but that's all I wanted to do, but I was being told not to do it. So, you know, my mental health deteriorated. I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety. I was in counselling. I was put on antidepressants. Everything was all quite miserable. I felt like I was banging my head against a wall. Waited 7 months to see this top sports doctor in the UK, and he was the one that thought it was the spine. I was like, I don't think it's the spine. So kind of felt like I wasn't really getting anywhere. So came back to New Zealand and kind of, I just had this feeling all along that there was something to do with this vascular problem that they'd kind of touched on in the beginning, but they were like, oh, it couldn't be anything. So I'd been off work for a long time, pretty much had no money. And I just thought, I have a feeling something's going on with the vascular thing. So living in Queenstown, there's obviously not many doctors or specialists at all. So took kind of the last bit of money that I had and paid privately to go and see a vascular specialist in Christchurch. He looked at my leg, he put some dye into my vein, and then the dye went straight into my artery from the vein. And he was like, okay, well, this might be the cause of your problem because it shouldn't do that. and the reason he was putting dye in there is because he was going to put some kind of glue in, thinking that there was some kind of problem with the vein that this glue would seal up. And he was like, it's a good job we tested that first, because if we put glue in there, you'd have glue go straight to your heart.
Yeah, that's not good.
So basically he found that a vein and an artery had connected in my leg in the exact location where I've been having this pain and this problem. But all this, you know, we're talking kind of 2 years now since the onset of this. So he was like, we can do something about that. We can put a coil in there to fix it. And hopefully that will resolve your problem. So that was 2019 that I had the operation done, had this coil put in between the vein and the artery. I think I was expecting some kind of miracle, which is why I didn't really feel that it resolved the problem. But actually, I think that probably has resolved the problem. But just the fact that it was going on for so long meant that my body was compensating in various different ways. And, you know, if that gap between the vein and the artery has been stretched so much from, you know, the amount of exercise that I do is not the kind of amount of exercise that someone that works in an office and doesn't do anything in the evenings, you know, that's, you know, I'm pushing it a lot more. And this is one of those things that they said, you know, if you didn't have an active lifestyle, you would never even know that you have this problem.
Right.
So it's all very rare and very weird. And I do still have some kind of symptoms of it and different other symptoms further up my leg. But I think it's all kind of compensatory because of what I had and because I had it for so long. So it was undiagnosable for a very long time. And I think I've kind of debated as to whether the operation did fix it. But my overriding thought right now is actually it was fixed. It's just that it's been going on for so long.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. So that was quite a long answer. When I said I'd give you a brief answer, that would give me quite a long one.
Fascinating, though. And, I mean, the vascular system, I don't even think I'd heard of it, you know, I don't know, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
As a system that is so important to us as runners.
Yeah.
And, you know, as your situation shows, if something goes wrong, can be really debilitating. You sort of think of it as like, oh, yeah, it's fine. But it's really important, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's, you know, what I had was just completely random and weird and rare. So I don't think it's anything that anyone else needs to be watching out for
sure.
Or to be alarmed about. It's just I had some freaky weird thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's like you say, I guess, if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, you're the athlete that can, you know, jam out 33K, you know, on the regular, then que sera, you know,
it probably wouldn't be an issue. The majority of the world are not going out and doing that, are they? So if anyone else does have that problem, it's something they may not even be aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that impact on us as runners when injuries do hit. I mean, obviously yours was compounded by a lot of issues there, not being able to work, for instance, and yeah. also, you know, going between two countries and so on. But that impact on our mental health is a significant issue as well, isn't it?
It's huge.
You know, as you've talked about.
Mm. Yeah, and I was very, very fortunate that every doctor that I went to speak to say I'm not coping, they were all really, really understanding, and they really did prioritize it, which is, you know, fantastic, and that's how it should be. So, yeah, really good.
Mm. And that was part of the reason why you decided to fundraise in the way you did on your run the length of Aotearoa.
Yeah, exactly. So after the whole experience that I went through and the pain that I felt, this is something that I hadn't experienced it before, so I didn't fully understand it, even though, you know, people talk to you and they tell you what it's like to be depressed. I think until you're there in that situation, I just don't think you realise how painful it can be. And I think that was the reason I wanted to raise money for Youthline and for Young Minds in the UK, was because the pain that I felt when I was depressed was so intense, and it was something that you can't take painkillers for it, you know. And I just thought, you know, if I was a young person going through that, I don't know how you'd cope. You know, I'm in my 30s and I've got life experience, and I still massively struggled. And I had a support network around me, and I was given counselling, and I was given antidepressants. You know, I had everything, and it was still so painful. And that was another part of the run, is that I just thought, you know, running 100 kilometres a day is going to be painful, but I don't think it could be as painful as the emotional torture that I went through when I was depressed. So kind of all of that sort of all came together that kind of culminated in me running the length of New Zealand and doing it for youth mental health. So, yeah, it all just kind of came together at the same time.
It's interesting, isn't it? We sort of classify, or there's this tendency to classify all pain as negative. Mm. And certainly pain can be negative, you know, chronic pain or the pain of imbalance or the pain, you know, you get a tooth abscess, you know, gosh, something's going on. Mm. But what we do to make ourselves feel better is cause ourselves some degree of discomfort, you know, and it's that strange dichotomy, you know, you could have the best run and feel so good and still be like, gosh, my legs hurt, or, you know, gosh, I feel tired, or whatever. It's such a strange thing, isn't it, how we as a society have this tendency to kind of just lump it all into like this really kind of negative framework. And it certainly can be, but it's so, 100 kilometres a day, you are going to be going through some things.
Yeah. And I think there's also... there's so much truth in the fact that without causing, that's not true. Without going through the pain, there's not so much scope for growth. You know, that's another thing that led to me doing this big run that I've just done, is that 4 years ago when I planned it, I don't think I was mentally strong enough. I feel like I had to go through what I went through in the last few years to make me strong enough to do this. And it was definitely a mental game rather than a physical game. So that mental strength was needed massively, massively.
Where do you start?
With?
I mean, like, I'm going to run across New Zealand. I mean, I want to know how you get to, like, I'm going to run across New Zealand. I need Adam Keane in my life. You know, like, how you get that, that's a journey in itself, right? Like, once you get to Adam Keane, and we both know Adam Keane, we're both fond of Adam Keane, you know, like, but... once you get to Adam Keane, what was his response? You know, did you contacted him? Hey, Adam, I'm going to run the length of New Zealand. Trying to see
I messaged him and said, "Do you fancy a challenge?"
What did he message back?
I think he was just very blasé about it. He was like, "Yeah, whatever, you know, yeah." Sure.
Stay savage, bicep emoji, bicep emoji.
Very casual about it. He didn't make me feel like I was doing anything out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, will you coach me for a 10K? Yeah, sure.
Wow. So you start, I mean, what's the first thing of considering this? You're like, right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to run the length of Aotearoa. What's your first sort of, where do you start?
Again, you're testing my memory. I think the trauma that I've been through since December the 18th has kind of erased half my memory. Where did I start? I don't know. So since recovering from my leg injury, I've only really been back into proper training for about a year and a half. Well, when I say proper training, it wasn't even like in like ultra style training. But in April this year, I saw Youthline were on the news saying how they've been completely inundated since COVID and they were struggling. So I'd just been out for a 9 kilometer run. And, you know, like one of those runs where you're just like, I'm amazing, I can take on the world. So I came back from my 9 kilometer run and I said to my partner, Tristan, I was like, I've had an idea. You know how Youthline were on the news? I've decided I'm going to run around Hagley Park in Christchurch for 24 hours to raise money for Youthline. I was like, this is going to be brilliant. I'm going to do it, like completely on a high from my 9 kilometer run, not really contemplating the pain that 24 hours would put me through. So decided to do that within the next 10 days, because if you leave it too long, you talk yourself out of it. And yeah, so I managed to cover 183 kilometers with no long distance training. So I'd just been doing like my average training, which is probably 25 to 30 kilometers a week. And that was just like a big confidence boost. I mean, I was in pain. I was absolutely destroyed, lost most of my toenails, blisters everywhere, couldn't walk for about a week. But the fact that I was capable of doing it kind of just sparked something in my mind about this dream that I'd had 4 years before. And I just thought, you know what, if I'm capable, because that was all mental. Like, it was literally just my mind game that got me through those 24 hours. And that kind of is probably what sparked the whole, actually, if I'm mentally strong enough to do this with no physical training, if I do the physical training, put in the hours, follow a program, actually, maybe my New Zealand dream is possible. So, yeah, kind of having just that confidence boost and the idea of like, actually, maybe that's possible this year. Although in April, when I first started thinking about it, I was thinking about like a 1.5 year plan, not a half a year plan. But then it was because I drove down to Invercargill. I drove from Christchurch to Invercargill and the traffic on the road was insane. And I just thought, this is the traffic on the road while we don't have tourists. I was like, I need to do that this year.
Yeah,
like, I'm not waiting another year till our borders are open and then there's tourists here as well. So those kind of few ideas kind of gave me a bit of a kick at the backside and was like, right, okay, I need to start thinking about this seriously now. For various reasons. And then, got Adam on board. And then I was like, okay, so this is serious. If I'm paying a coach, because I don't have a lot of money, if I'm paying someone, I need to make sure this is going to happen. So then it was a case of, right, I need to get sponsors because I need money coming in to fund this, or it's going to be a very different style run. I think I always had in my mind that it would go ahead. Even if I didn't get sponsors, I would find a way for it to happen. But I guess it would just be my support team would be less happy because it would be a lot of just camping in the bush, which, you know, they're not going to get the sleep that I need them to get. It would be a lot of eating noodles, which isn't going to make them happy either. You know, you've got to look after these people that are looking after you.
You've got to pay for the ice cream van somehow.
That's right. Exactly.
I can't believe I didn't think of that. I should have had an ice cream van with me.
Next time, when you go from Bluff.
Next time. When I'm the support team for someone else. That's right.
So what does training even look like? How do you prepare your body to run 100K a day for 21 days in a row, or less than 21 days in a row? But
yeah. So one or two long runs each week, which would be kind of up to 7 hours each. Some speed work, some faster, shorter runs, quite a bit of strength and conditioning, two or three sessions of strength and conditioning each week. And yeah, that was really.
So when you say,
you said that you're, you said that you're, you know, before running 24, 180 odd kilometers in Hagley Park, your normal, your 25 to 35 a week.
Yeah.
What did you top out at during, you know, your sort of peak weeks?
Yeah, in the training for this.
Yeah.
Opposed to, yeah. So I think my biggest week was 184 kilometers.
Right.
And that was probably 4 or 5 weeks before I started.
Yeah. Wow.
So I guess it's that thing, isn't it? I mean, you can bang on the, you can hammer that nerve. It'd be like someone punching you in the arm 20, 30 times. It's going to go numb. You know, you're planning to run the length of,
yeah,
you know, 100K consecutively. There's only so much you can do, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. You can't be going out and doing 100K days for that. I did a practice run over 2 days, but that was months before, and that was really just to have a look at the logistics of the support team working with me, and also to try and replicate my nutrition plan, which was so important that I did it, because I realized my nutrition plan was completely wrong. So I had to restart again. So,
right.
Yeah, I was really glad that I did that kind of like 3 months beforehand.
Mm. Because that is so,
sorry, Eugene.
Yeah, well, I'll come back to what I was going to say, while we're on nutrition, so you were, I think I read every 10K you were consuming eating. something?
Shoveling.
So
yeah.
what were you eating? And so was it a regimented, right, 10K, I've got to stop, walk, eat? Is that how it would work?
Not that regimented. Apparently, I did realise, someone told me that you can get an alarm on your watch, because I've got a Coros watch. Apparently it will beep at you to tell you to eat or to tell you to do whatever you need, but I'm not techie enough to figure that out. So, so generally, yeah, I would go roughly on the 10K, but I was also maximizing the fact that I was walking most of the hills. So if I could see that there was a hill right at 11K, or if there was a hill at 9K, then I would walk the hill and eat at the same time. So just always trying to maximize everything that's going on. But yeah, so my days were split into 60K in the morning, just to get that 60K done. So in that 60K, it was every 10K eating. And then I would have lunch. I had breakfast before. So I'd been working on a high-fat, low-carb diet, which works well for me and my body. I know that it's like talking about politics, talking about high-fat diets. People get really into it and really feisty. It works for me.
Yep.
It may not work for someone else. It's all good. So a lot of my food was kind of yogurt, peanut butter, cheese, meats, veggies, salads with olive oil, lots of oil, tuna with oil, anything with oil. So that was kind of what would get me through that first 60K. Then I'd have my lunch. And then the afternoon, it was just when my body wasn't so happy about digesting food. So then I would go on to Tailwind, which obviously is carbs, but that's okay to work into it as well. That was great for the afternoons, because you just become a food eating machine, and it gets so much on the gut, you know, it's hard. But then in the evenings, once I've stopped and I've had a shower and done my ice bath and everything like that, then I would just consume as much food as humanly possible.
I think that's the thing, isn't it, with diet. And I know Mickey Willardon, she talks about, you know, food prison, which I think is a really wonderful way to put it. You know, like you're in this prison, or you're in this prison, or you're in this prison. You're running 100K. You could literally, and I'm not suggesting you do this, you could eat a seagull. You know, I ate a seagull before. Yeah, exactly. Just gagged it down. Whatever you want today, because you're running 100 kilometers a day for 20 days. It's just,
yeah.
Yeah, you've just got to do what works for you.
Yeah.
Your body will let you know.
Yeah, it does. So I got to day 18 and I'd stuck to my plan, and it worked really well, and I'd had zero problems with energy at all for all 18 days. And then on day 18, my body just went, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm just over it. But I really want Frosties with cold milk. Like, you need to get me Frosties with cold Frosties milk now.
Like Tony the Tiger.
Like Tony the Tiger, Frosties. Yeah.
Where were you, like, midway between Invercargill and Bluff?
Oh, it was just, like, in the middle of nowhere, State Highway 1. So my team just went, we've got to get Emma Frosties. And they just scattered out all over the South Island in search of Frosties, which you cannot find anywhere. So we made a compromise of cornflakes with sugar. Didn't hit the spot. Then we went for crunchy nut cornflakes, and that was it. Game over.
There you go.
They were just crunchy nut cornflakes all over the camper van after that.
Isn't it weird when you get those,
by the box full.
When you get those cravings? I remember I had one on a long run. I ran in the door and just ran to the cupboard, just throwing stuff out, getting a can of peaches, which all I wanted was a can of peaches. It was like, just get me the can of peaches. And it's just, I don't know what it was, just something my body told me it needed. And
body's clever. Nothing's
gonna stop with
body's
it.
Yeah. Very, very clever.
Yeah.
Mine was peanut butter and gherkin.
Together?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Don't knock it till you tried it.
No, I won't. Yeah.
Crunchy, how does it work?
Salty, sweet.
Are you like spreading the peanut butter on the gherkin?
I'm
dipping
not a
the
savage.
Gherkin?
I was on toast. Come on. I'm not an animal.
I thought you were taking the gherkin and scooping the peanut butter and jamming it in your face.
Maybe, look, and I'm not being silly, and I hope this doesn't come across as a sort of hit. Like, if I was doing what you were doing, yeah, probably I would be. I'd just be like spooning. But no, I had it on a piece of toast, and it was perfectly
very
fine.
Very civilized.
Yeah,
I'm try that.
A 5-star restaurant.
Yeah, I'm try that.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I will circle back to what I was going to ask, which was when you say strength and conditioning, is that like at the gym, heavy weights, or is it yoga, or what are you talking about?
That's kind of on my living room floor with a yoga mat and some free weights. Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was body weight stuff. But I had previously been doing a lot of weighted exercises for my leg injury to strengthen that up. So I continued with those as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of it was body weight stuff, a lot of core control, glutes, but then also adding in some weighted exercises just to keep that dodgy leg of mine strong.
Yeah. And was there Adam advising you on that stuff as well?
Yeah. So he would set a program and then I would kind of just adapt things for what I needed for my injuries.
Mm. And you felt that made a difference to you?
Oh yeah, definitely. I got so many injuries in that 21 days, just injury after injury. And then I think, well, what would the state of my body have been if I hadn't have done that strength and conditioning?
So,
Tell
us about some of those, because I've seen you had to stop in at podiatrists and you had motorbike delivery of new shoes and also it sounded like a carnage on State Highway 1.
Yeah. Maybe that should be the name of the book. Carnage on State Highway 1. Yeah, it was full on. Like running on the road for 100k today is not good on the body, especially with the camber. So all of my injuries were related to the camber. It's basically just one side of my body that's destroyed and the other side is pretty much fine. So started off with an Achilles problem, which I didn't even notice. Like I just took my shoe off at the end of day 2 and my Achilles was huge. Just my leg started swelling. But I didn't even notice anything had happened. So I guess that was kind of slow onset from the camber. So first of all, was dealing with that. Then the swelling just went all the way up my leg to my knee. Then after a few days, my knee just kind of went stiff and I could probably only bend my leg about 10 degrees. The other leg was fine, moving like normal. Just the right leg was only moving about 10 degrees. So we kind of put out a bit of a plea for someone to come and assist. Well, actually, one of my support team just went into a petrol station and went, does anybody know of any physios around here? Just like shouting out in the petrol station. And a guy was like, yeah, my mate's a physio. Cool. So then like this guy just came out to the side of the road and did some acupuncture in the camper van. At which point the camper van stank so bad because we'd just been living like dirt bags and I felt so embarrassed. But this guy, Chinese acupuncturist, put some needles in my leg and I was able to run again. So went from basically not being able to move my knee to then being able to run again, which was a miracle. And just things like that, kind of these guardian angels just came from everywhere on my run. I really felt like the whole of New Zealand was just looking out for me. It was just incredible. It happened on more than one occasion. Then as I got back down towards Canterbury, I had insane pain in my IT band and another guardian angel physio from around here, she came out and strapped up my leg and massaged my leg. That was amazing. And then I'm just giving you the main ones here. There was obviously a lot of other ones.
Yeah.
There's also the hole in the bottom of my foot. So I've got a hole in the bottom of my foot, and my podiatrist, Gareth from Southern Sports Podiatry in Queenstown, he has been my podiatrist that we've been on the phone to the whole time, pretty much on the phone to him every day. And he couldn't figure out if it was a very deep blister that you could feel the hole under the skin, or whether it was some kind of tendon or muscle or ligament or whatever. Because he was just talking to me over the phone, getting people to poke different bits and see what was going on. So we didn't know what that was, but then went to see a podiatrist in Timaru. And she just basically, this was like 4 days from the end, and she went, that's pretty bad. How do you feel about just taking a lot of painkillers for the next 4 days? I was like, I can do that. That's fine. I just need to keep running. So that she strapped it all up, kind of like strap it up and ignore it, and just took painkillers to get over that. But then 2 or 3 days from the end, something at the front of my shin towards the bottom, towards my ankle, something was just excruciating, and I still don't really know what it is now. I'm not actually walking that much, definitely not running at the moment. I'm not able to drive at the moment because of this thing on my right leg that I'm just waiting to figure out what it is. Hopefully I'll get referred for an ultrasound soon. But yeah, it was just excruciating. This kind of lump grew at the front of my shin, and then I was still able to run for about a day, and then it just got so bad that shooting pains were going up from this lump all the way up to my knee and pretty much throwing me to the floor. Felt like a lightning bolt coming from the ground up my leg and throwing me to the ground. So that was the worst one. And obviously it's the one that's still with me now, this injury. And again, another guardian angel just came out from nowhere, an osteopath called Jerome with his needles, came to do some needles on my leg in the camper van at the side of the road. And at first it didn't really make any difference. So I'd been walking for about half a day, and I'd literally just been doing the mathematics in my head the whole time going, okay, so if I can't run, so I'm normally running at about 10 kilometers per hour, but I'm not doing that anymore. So the fastest that I can walk is 5 kilometers an hour. And I don't even know that I can walk that consistently for a while. And I'd have to do 5 kilometers an hour every hour for 36 hours to beat my target, which means not sleeping for 2 nights. And I hate walking, you know, going through all of this mathematics in my head constantly and trying to like stomp along as quickly as I can, thinking I'm not able to stop to eat. I'm just going to have to do 5Ks an hour. And how can I sustain 5Ks an hour? Because this is me working really hard. Anyway, Jerome did his needles, didn't do anything to start with. So I was still walking for quite a few hours. And then somebody came to join me, a lovely guy, I think his name was Jason, came to join me in Balclutha. And I started to put a little shuffle in because, you know, you get really embarrassed when runners come out to join you and you're not running, you're just power walking down the road. So I was like, okay, I'm going to try and shuffle only on the flats. We'll walk the hills, but when there's a flat, I'm going to try and shuffle. And I was like, okay, it's okay. The leg is moving. It's okay. We'll walk a bit just to be safe, and then we'll shuffle, then walk it. And so I started shuffling and managed to shuffle my way to kind of like 11 o'clock at night that night, knowing that the next day was the day that I wanted to finish, and just thinking I can either try and keep walking through the night and not have any sleep, and then if I have to walk, I have to walk, but if I can run, I could get there in time, or I can try and get some sleep, and you never know what miracle might happen overnight. So managed to sleep from 12 o'clock till 4 o'clock, and then when I woke up in the morning, did a little bit of shuffling, and then managed to get into a run. And it was just a miracle, an absolute miracle that I was able to run again. So I managed to run my way to the end. But yeah, that's just the main injuries. Wow. There was constant injuries. Road running is not good for you. Sticks to the trail.
Yeah.
But I think running 100 kilometers a day. No, there's not a physio or osteopath or podiatrist, anyone aligned with running, pardon me, who's not got their needles and a bag ready in their room to get the big call up, something like that. Like, everyone would be so stoked.
They were all so nice. They were so nice, and they were so happy. And actually, nobody charged me any money. Every time that someone was called out, none of them charged. And actually, a lot of them made a donation to charity as well.
Oh, wow.
Just amazing. Wow. I know. Yeah. It just makes you want to cry every time. Like, these people are so good.
And even beside the squadron of medical professionals who followed you, you had so many people come and join you and run with you. Did you run a step alone? Like, it seems like there was somebody with you the whole time.
Yeah, I think it looks like that from the outside, but I guarantee you there was a lot of time alone.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like there was probably 60 to 70% of my time I was alone.
Right.
Yeah. I definitely did get joined by a lot of people and cheered on by so many people, like kids coming to the end of their driveways when they know I'm coming past, driving out with their little signs saying, "Go, Emma." And every time I saw a child, I cried. You know, like doing that much exercise, you're on the brink emotionally all the time.
Yeah.
And then these kids come out with their little signs and you're like, "Oh, I'm raising money for, like, in case you have any problems." It brought a tear to my eye every time.
And how close did you have to go to home?
Very close.
Yeah.
I was probably
how tempting was that?
500 meters of my house.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
I just went straight past.
Did you have to put up a blinker? Like, don't look.
Yeah.
I felt like when I was running, I was constantly blinkered. It was just like Emma focus mode the whole time. In fact, my team have just this evening, they've been like sending photos around of me and like calling my, like, I don't know, my like evil eye or something. Because there's so many photos where I just look like I hate someone, but it's not. It's just like pure focus. There's no hatred. There's no bad feelings whatsoever. I'm just in focus mode. Like, I'm not smiling anymore.
Game face.
Yeah, big time.
How did you, I mean, that's a long time to keep a game face on. Did you use music? Did you use audiobooks or podcasts? Or were you just...
Just literally watching every single car to make sure it doesn't hit
me. Yeah, right.
Mm. Yeah, mentally exhausting.
Yeah.
Do not ever run on State Highway 1.
Yeah. And there was an issue. There was an incident with a supporter.
Yeah, so the original plan... was going to be kind of to replicate what I'd done in South Africa and Africa, which was to have someone cycle beside me or just behind me so that they carry all my water, all my nutrition, any extra layers that we need, just basically anything that you could possibly need without having to get the vehicle to be right beside you. That's not sensible. So for the first week, I had a cyclist beside me or behind me. And Tristan, my partner, he had been on the bike for a few hours on day one and day two. And then day two, he got sunburnt. So we made a decision that if you're sunburnt, you don't go on the bike because nobody wants anyone in hospital with heat exhaustion. So he just drove the car for most of the days. And then Christmas Day came around and his sunburn had gone. Lisa had been on the bike in the morning and then the afternoon came around. So Tristan jumped on the bike. He was behind me. He'd probably been on the bike for no more than half an hour. And then all of a sudden, I just felt something hit me. And it was Tristan. It was his body. The bike had gone one direction. His body was thrown into me. And a car had hit him. And then he was just on the floor screaming and yelling. And it's just one of the worst things that anybody wants to go through, to see someone that they love and care for on the floor screaming.
Mm.
And his arm looking like it was snapped in half. It was pretty horrendous. Had to like flag down vehicles to call an ambulance. What I didn't realize was the vehicle that I'd flagged down was the vehicle that had hit him. So that was interesting once I realized. But we were very, very lucky that within a matter of seconds, two off-duty paramedics turned up. So they were dealing with him. And then within a few minutes after that, police turned up. A few minutes after that, fire service turned up. There was a whole load of people around us.
Mm.
And we're very, very lucky that his injuries weren't bad. It looked like it was really, really bad to start with. He was on the floor, not moving around very much at all. His arm looked like it snapped in half. The paramedics were completely convinced that his arm was broken. And then he had everything x-rayed and there's not a broken bone on his body, which is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
how terrifying though.
Yeah, the bike was completely broken. The bike is a write-off. The windscreen on this car was smashed. So he hit the windscreen. The wing mirror was off. Everything was a complete and utter mess, but he came out of it and he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just some guardian angel was looking down on us.
Throughout the whole
run, there were so many obstacles and so many things that happened that could have been horrendous, but they all turned out okay. It's just absolutely amazing.
Mm. I mean, even yourself, you know, you said that you felt something hit you, so technically you broke his fall. That could have ended really badly.
Yeah, definitely. We've talked about that quite a lot. Like, the helmet isn't damaged at all, so his head didn't hit the ground, and I think it's because he hit me. So that could have been much worse, you know? I had bruises on the back of my legs, but that's nothing compared to if he'd have skidded along the ground.
Donged his head. Jeepers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy time. That was Christmas Day.
So apart from, I mean, and this is the thing, isn't it? Like, living, Eugene and I both live fairly rurally, and, you know, you run on country roads or highways, and it's a mind game, to say the least. You know, you really have to keep your wits about you. I mean, have you and I can't imagine what that's like on state highway, and were there any moments of, you know, calm, and have you picked out any special sort of beautiful moments or really wonderful moments, or is it still just a bit of a blur?
The whole thing is really quite a blur still. I keep trying to take myself back into the moment, but I think I'm still processing it and dealing with it, and I don't know, maybe it'll take a little while, but as I go through all of the photos and videos and everything for Guinness World Records, it kind of bring it back a little bit. But you do still feel like you're looking at it from an outsider's perspective, because that's obviously what the photos and videos are. Mm. Like, that's that girl, Emma, that's doing that run. That's me. It does still feel like a bit of a blur, but in terms of the times and the places that were really beautiful and really serene, in terms of location, like, the far north was just spectacular. And I probably had 2 days of very few cars on the road. So that was amazing. That was really, really nice. I could literally run down the middle of the road and it was fine. It was beautiful. Yeah. So in terms of locations and positive feelings from it, then the first 2 days in the far north were just amazing because the location is spectacular, and also because there was less traffic. But kind of from then onwards, the things that made it beautiful and made it an amazing event were the people and the community that came out and supported. That was the main distraction from the insanity of the traffic and the noise of the road.
Mm.
Yeah. But it's the same with all the running, isn't it? It's just the running community. They're just amazing human beings and willing to do so much to help another runner.
Mm. In lots of ways, it felt like a relay was going on.
Yeah, it did. They were kind of like, let's pass the Emma.
Yeah, you were the baton.
Well, I'll take it to here and then you take it to there. Yeah. It was great.
What was that last day like?
Emotional.
Yeah.
Emotional. And it's one of those ones that, I don't know if you've ever had this, but you look back on it and you're like, I don't know physically how I did that. Like, I was in so much pain, like so much pain. And I did the longest distance on the least amount of sleep. But again, it was the community. It was the people that were around me that came and joined me, and they listened to me if I was moaning. they didn't ever say, God, you're a miserable woman. You know, they were so happy to be involved and to be part of something, part of a bigger event, you know. It was the people that dragged me through big time.
Mm. And how much, I mean, I don't want to be reductive, but how much did you end up raising for Lifeline? And so what was the charity in the UK?
So Youthline over here, and then Young Minds in the UK. So I smashed my goal over here. So I wanted to raise 21,000 for each of the charities. Obviously, doing an event in New Zealand is going to raise more money for a New Zealand charity.
Of course.
How it's going to go. So I think I'm on about 24,000. For Youthline. Oh,
brilliant.
Which is good.
Yeah.
But it still feels like small numbers compared to what I think they deserve. And then I think I'm on about $6,000, $6,000 or $7,000, the equivalent of the Young Minds in the UK.
Look, I mean, thank you very much. It's you know, it's that you could say that's right, you know, but you did that. Right?
Yeah.
No, you did that.
Yeah, or, well, we did that big time. Like, it's my support team. They, without them, those numbers would not be what they are. I mean, without my support team, I would not have been able to do what I did. But yeah, it's...
And likewise, I mean, and just sorry to play devil's advocate, like, without your support team, absolutely, but a support team ain't nothing without someone running 100 kilometers.
Yeah.
I could have the best support team in the world. Like, two ice cream trucks. I'd be like, I'm pulling the pin, boys.
I've got a hole in the bottom of my foot. I'm out.
That's right. How about a banana split? No, look, thank you, but still.
Flake and top? Yeah, okay. All right, maybe okay. Just another 10K.
That's right.
Look, I mean... Sorry, I was just going to say, we do have UK listeners. So, you know, rattle the bucket there, Emma, and we'll put our links on the show notes. And be sure to, to help out if you can. Sorry, Matt.
No, I just wanted to say, like, Emma, you've been so generous with your time. I mean, I can't imagine... Like you said, you're not really driving, and you said, "Hey, I stayed up all day today. It was a good achievement." So, best you get to bed. Just wanted to ask you before we wrap up. Like, we'll ask the same question we ask everyone who comes on Dirt Church Radio, and that's, Emma, what's been your greatest run ever?
Ooh.
Or roller skate.
I feel like it's too early to say the length of New Zealand.
You don't have. There's no time limit.
No, you know when you're like, I will never do that again. It's been so painful. I've got such negative feelings about it. But then I'm like, oh, but it was really good. Tempted to say the Paparoa track, actually.
Yeah.
Just because it is spectacular. Have you guys been there?
No. We get asked a lot, when are you coming to the West Coast?
It's because you kind of come up onto this ridgeline and you can see out over the ocean, and it's just beautiful. And I think that's probably it. But, you know, which it feels small to say that when I've done such huge things like Africa, but, you know, hats off to New Zealand. You've pulled it off with this little small trail. It's
there
beautiful.
We go.
Yeah, it's perfect combination of rocks and waters.
Yeah. And it's on the west coast of the South Island, which is so rough and rugged and spectacular.
No, we must do that, Matt. Well, thank you so, so much, Emma. As Matt said, you better get off to bed, but congratulations again. And thank you for giving us, you know, inspiring us and you know, enabling us to cheer you on as a running community like we did for, it was a joy
Absolutely.
To watch.
Thank you. I'm very appreciative.
And I think in the context as well, like you need something good, right? Like you need something really good, so thank you for that. That was just fantastic.
You are absolutely welcome.
Injury chat, holy moly, that was a deep dive.
Specialists are incredible.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah. Well, and people running up from petrol stations with needle bags are incredible.
That's right.
As well.
Yeah. That's the thing, though. That's every professional, every healthcare professional's like dream. That's the big send. 100%. 100% the big send. Look, you know, what an incredible thing. And thank you to all those that, ran out. And I know that there was a bunch of you because I saw a bunch of you on the Instagram following Emma around. Thank you for that. Thank you for all who donated. And we'll have the links up on our show notes.
So. And heaps of great sponsorship, as she mentioned as well. So, you know.
100%.
Yeah, Mark and Phoebe at Tailwind, for instance, and it was a movement, really, wasn't it?
It was a movement.
Yeah,
absolutely, was a movement. My goodness me.
Yeah.
Look, and thank you all for tuning in. We're back, and we're stoked, and we're on social media at Dirt Church Radio, and you can email us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. You can find us on all the social media platforms, like and subscribe, all of the podcast platforms even, like and subscribe if you fancy, and you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com.
Don't forget to write in with your greatest friend ever. We love to hear from you, and you can read them on the website too.
Thanks to our sponsors, Scott Running, Further Faster, and Sieli. And thank you to our Patreon patrons and Wild Things. Thank you to our editor, Kieran. And we've got a great show lined up for you next week. So please stay tuned.
Ma te wa. Thanks, Rigby.